Showing courage comes in many forms, from doing something physical to simply trying to right what you see as a wrong. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. And on this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I will discuss two movies that feature characters who tackle different types of courage, from the protagonist in Kitty Green's The Assistant, a look at the dark happenings in a New York film production company, to the exploits of professional skier base jumper Matthias Giraud in the documentary feature Super Frenchie. We'll also preview the remainder of the week of the 2020 Spokane International Film Festival. So don't touch that dial, because Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
My name is Amanda Loader, and I worked for 4 years on air at Spokane Public Radio from 2007 through 2011. I started off as a reporter and moved on to All Things Considered host. And I'd just like to wish Spokane Public Radio a happy 40th anniversary.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbinder, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that looks forward every year to the prospect of being spiffy, which is to say attending the movies at the annual Spokane International Film Festival. The 2020 festival kicks off this weekend and will continue through next Friday at the Magic Lantern Theater. In addition to providing a festival preview, we'll also talk about at least one theatrical release, The Assistant, a film festival type offering about a young woman working in the New York office of a film production company, and Shades of Harvey Weinstein, what she sees going on and what she strongly suspects is going on behind closed doors. We'll also discuss the Spiff 2020 closing night movie, the documentary Super Frenchie, which was directed by Eastern Washington University film professor Chase Ogden. Let's begin, though, with a look at the dark side of the movie business. It seems providential that The Assistant should open in Spokane just days before the verdict came down in the Harvey Weinstein case. Weinstein, if you don't keep up with current affairs, is the former studio head who was charged with sexual abuse and rape of dozens of women and who was found guilty on Monday of 2 counts, criminal sexual assault in the first degree and rape in the third degree. In The Assistant, which was written and directed by Kitty Green, most known for having directed the documentary casting JonBenet, details the experiences of Jane, played by Julia Garner, a recent college graduate and a new hire at a New York-based film production company. We watch as Jane rises early, takes a car service into the company's Manhattan office, turns on the lights, fixes coffee, and does pretty much everything required of a traditional gopher, from making travel arrangements to taking phone calls that no one else wants to handle to cleaning up her boss's office, including picking up discarded earrings, and on a regular basis sending that same tyrannical boss, whom we never actually see, the same coded letter of apology. Slowly, gradually, we see what Jane sees and experience what many Miramax and Weinstein Company employees must have. Predatory behavior masked as simply the price of doing business. If nothing else, Green's film gives some needed subtext to the headlines, and it provides the young Garner a starring vehicle she richly deserves.
This movie was fascinating to me because it does unfold and it almost feels as though it takes place in real time at various points. The fact that the filmmaker was able to get Julia Garner, who I thought did a superior job of playing the role of the young, eager assistant at this production company, and the way that she was able to capture her face and these close-ups of her face throughout the entire film, I thought was really mesmerizing. Now, having said that, we're talking about some tough material, but we're also talking about the mundane activities of this one particular young woman. And so we're following her at her real day, and we start to get a sense of the heaviness and the oppression that these entry-level jobs can wreak on people. And I think it was a good lesson for me, because I think oftentimes those of us in our baby boomer cohort are telling people in their 20s, oh, just get a job, just get your foot in the door, just do this. And this film made her experience look truly horrible.
Are you saying we forgot how it was to be a gopher? And
no, we had some crummy jobs, but I think, let's face facts, but this just seemed to take it to a different level. But I think this is the typical experience of many young people and young women in particular. So she identifies a problem and Jane identifies a problem. And so she thinks that others are going to see this through the same lens that she does. And that is so not the case. And everyone sort of gaslights her and acts surprised that she would want to address issues of possible sexual harassment or worse.
And at the same time, everybody knows what's happening.
Right. So in The Assistant, we are left again with this slow reveal. And I think that was disconcerting to some people who were viewers of this film. And we can talk about that a little bit after the two of you weigh in, because there were some people who were clearly not excited about their choice to see The Assistant, at least last weekend at the AMC.
Oh, you're talking about the people that were in the theater with
Yes. Yes.
Well, I saw this on a screener alone, so there was no one grousing.
And no one walked out.
I mean, no one walked out. No, and I liked this movie a lot, at least in terms of what it's doing, because I think it's doing something really, really canny, but it's not doing it in a flashy way. I mean, this movie isn't flashy at all.
I mean, it's clearly a feminist film, but it is subtle in the way that it presents itself.
Right, because as you said, so much of this movie is us watching this character do mundane tasks. And as you said, sometimes it feels like it's in real time, even though this is a pretty short movie. It's only about 80 minutes long, I would say, without closing credits. But we're watching her photocopy scripts and print off headshots and take out the trash and pick up after these meetings that have happened. And then meanwhile, this Weinstein-esque figure, because even though his name isn't even said in the film, that's clearly who he is supposed to be, or he's an avatar for the type of mogul that Harvey Weinstein was.
Or Roger Ailes, or, you know, anybody else.
Yeah, right.
He's never seen it, but his shadow extends over the entire movie. And I found that to be a really powerful way of dealing with this. And the fact that his transgressions, his crimes, are seen not by the lens of the camera, but through, you mentioned, Dan, through items or through offhand comments that people make. I think there's something really powerful in that moment where she finds the earring on the floor of the office. Mm-hmm. And that earring represents a lot of things. There's a lot of weight associated with that earring. And I found the way that Key Green did that to be really powerful. And then there's the sequence near the end of The Assistant where she goes to the HR director, who's played by Matthew McFadden, and once she explains the behavior that she's seeing, she realizes, oh, I don't really have a case here. Even though we know that's what's going on, I don't have concrete evidence that something bad is happening. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, even if I did, no one would care. And the way that this conversation between her and the HR guy goes from kind of prodding and questioning and interrogating to outright threats, and the way in which that cascades down is so believable and so powerful. And then she just goes back to making copies again. And I think to speak to a general audience's reaction to this movie, because it doesn't have a standard three-act structure. It's set over the course of this one day, and we watch her do mundane things. I think that's the point, because I think what Kitty Green is trying to say is that abuses of power, when they're left to happen, when everybody is complicit, even the young women that are working in this office are in a way complicit and know that they are because they have no other choice, that kind of thing becomes as mundane as photocopying scripts. And it just becomes another part of your day. And so I find the way in which she went about this material to be really powerful. But the movie itself is kind of unassuming in its style and by design, I think. So I thought this was a pretty interesting film.
Yeah, I liked it as well. I'm hoping against hope that she didn't have to pay for her own car service, that at least they didn't make her take the subway
in the middle of the night to get to work. In this office before everybody else shows up. Well, she's there after everyone's gone.
She holds
home.
It together in many ways. I mean, you can see these little mini crises bubble up. Mm-hmm. And the two guys who she shares the office with, and we never know exactly what any of their jobs might be. They're always advising her and allaying her concerns. But then she's picking up literally and figuratively yes. for everyone
right.
in
mm-hmm.
that place. So she mm-hmm. is keeping things running.
And she's only been there for 5 weeks, I think,
yeah.
is what the guy tells, you know. So she's a quick learner. She's made a difference in the way the office runs. But at the same time, I think we're right at the point where she's going, oh, my God, what have I gotten into? And how do I get what I want to get out of this?
And is it worth it?
Right. And that's the other thing that's, I think, may be challenging for many viewers is there's no catharsis. At the very end, we aren't clear what she's going to do. We're looking at her and either she goes along or she gets along.
Because there's line in that. And I think the key to the film is that two-hander between Julia Garner and Matthew McFadden. And I think they're both terrific in that scene. I think that's the key to the film because there is a moment where he says, you know, you didn't have that much experience when you came here, but we took a chance on you.
Yeah.
And you want to get to this point.
Right.
But how are you going to do there? You have to work your way up.
And the boss thinks you're great.
And if you go, we can replace you in a second. And so she's basically being threatened and pushed into a corner saying, sure, you can go. But if you do go, your dreams are dashed. You won't have another shot at this. And
right.
so she has to figure out.
And there are thousands of people out there who want your job.
And she has to wonder, is this even a business that I want to go into if
right.
this is how it's going to be?
Right. right. And we hardly see any other women throughout this entire film. And I think that this Jane definitely needs some women friends to rally around.
Yeah. She doesn't seem to have any friends at all because her life is her work at
exactly.
this point.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. At least it has been for 5 weeks.
And
right.
she's just moved to New York and
right.
you know, she's living in Queens and so forth and so on. But just one thing to say, Nathan, you pointed out that this got really good critical reviews and really low audience reviews on mm-hmm. Rotten Tomatoes. So I just think people need to know what they're getting into. I mean, I mm-hmm. think I would show this in a class, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Because I do think it's very much an example of how things can go wrong and you know it and you feel it and you try to do something about it. But in the end, you either have to make your peace with it or break
and
free.
And I think what this movie gets is that feeling that you're talking about, because mm-hmm. this isn't a hectoring film. It isn't a pushy film in the message it's trying to convey. It's just showing you real life and how would you navigate this. And so I think it's powerful in that way.
Very quickly, one scene that I really liked was she shares an elevator with the actor, Patrick Wilson.
Oh,
he's
right.
never identified. We looked at each other. That's Patrick Wilson.
I thought he was going to come back into the movie.
Exactly.
She never
says anything to him. And I went, yeah, that's perfect. That's exactly mm-hmm. what you do. You do not talk to the talent.
Right.
If you're a gopher.
Right.
And we were talking about The Assistant, Kitty Green's movie written and directed. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the documentary Super Frenchie and to do our final preview of the 2020 Spokane International Film Festival. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the theatrical release, The Assistant. Let's now move to the 2020 Spokane International Film Festival, which begins this year's run this weekend. Following a Friday opening night at the Garland, SPIFF 2020 continues over the next 7 days at the Magic Lantern, culminating with a Friday night screening of the documentary Super Frenchie, followed by a closing night party at Osprey, the newly renovated lounge at the Ruby River Hotel. Let's begin with a look at a daredevil skier base jumper named Matthias Giroux. By now, we've become familiar with daredevils who push the limits, from those who climb mountains to those who jump off them. Both in films such as those produced by the late Warren Miller to the 2019 Oscar-winning feature documentary Free Solo, we've been introduced not just to what these adventure seekers do, but in the best productions, why they do it. In the case of the French-born Mathias Giraud, who came back from near disaster to become the first person to base jump off Mount Hood's Mississippi Head, I'm not sure we ever get much past the "I do it because it's their school of motivation." But Giraud does exhibit a passion for life, one that he wants to pass on to his son, and he has an engaging personality, arguably more engaging than Alex Honnold, of Free Solo fame. And Chase Ogden, the Eastern Washington University film professor who produced, directed, and edited Super Frenchie, gets enough decent footage from a gaggle of camera operators to make his first documentary feature both fun to watch and, particularly at one point, suspenseful to a fault.
So I actually had the opportunity to interview Chase, who is the director of this film and a former director of the Spokane International Film Festival, yep. It should be said. And he told me that this movie took over a decade to make, that he met Mathias Giraud back in 2008 or 2009, I believe, saw him do a base jump and thought, I need to know more about what makes this guy tick, because he's an obviously just such an outgoing personality.
Oh, yeah.
And so over the course of those years, they just kind of kept meeting up, and he filmed more of Giraud's jumps and got more footage and met his family and interviewed him about what makes him tick and why he does what he does. And then about halfway through this movie, there is an accident, and it forces this guy to basically readjust his priorities, because he's about to become a father, he's been married, and he thinks, well, this is my passion, this is what drives me, but it could also kill me. Mm-hmm. And how do I go about this in a way where I can still chase this high that I get without putting my life in danger all the time? You mentioned Free Solo in talking about Super Frenchie, and I thought about that all the way through this film as well. But I agree with you that whereas Alex Honnold, who is the subject of that film, was kind of this blank slate of a guy in a lot of ways, you're kind of projecting your ideas of who he is onto him. That's not the case with this movie, where you have this guy who's just, you know,
a larger-than-life
guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that both films are very good and feature some really amazing footage where you're kind of like burying your fingernails into your palms because you're like, why is he doing that? Because he's riding skis straight off of a cliff and then parachuting down. I mean, that's an insane thing to do. But I think both films are about that central question that we talk about every time we see a film that's about an extreme sport like this, which is why? Like you said, I don't know if we ever get at that why, but then again, I don't know if we necessarily have to, because I think we understand what it is about the thing that he loves so
well, much. Well, I think we got a little bit more backstory here than maybe you're giving the film credit for in some ways, because we do have each of his parents revealing some things that have happened. And then he also talks very frankly about the depression
and his sister's
and other
death.
Things in his family.
It also sounds like his parents, I mean, maybe this because they're French, so maybe it's just kind of the French brusqueness that they bring to things, but there's certainly a sense that they were very hard on him.
Well, he says at one point that his mom was a hard taskmaster.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's a guy who started skiing when he was really young, 18 months old, and he finds his passion. And I think in contrast to Free Solo, where what Alex Honnold chose to do was this very painstaking, deliberate, you know, placement of climbing and so forth. Here, this is just flat out, go for it.
Good point.
Same risk of death, I think, but it just fit their personalities perfectly.
A burst of adrenaline as opposed to this kind of zen oneism.
Right. And I wanted to make the point that you're absolutely right, Nathan, that you watch him do all these things. And, you know, if anybody's afraid of heights, you know, this movie, from the very opening scene,
when he goes off afraid of heights.
Exactly. He goes off a cliff and it's like, wow. But then the movie goes on and on. And it's like, oh, he did another jump. And then about halfway through, there was a moment in which I went, whoa, because something totally unexpected happens. Mm-hmm. And it's what changes the tenor of his life and the movie. Because
I really did like his relationship with his wife and his son. And
especially his son.
Yes, because they were so cute. And I have to say, I thought this movie was beautiful because we are dealing with these huge mountains and we're dealing with these people who are involved who have this amazing skill set of heli-skiing, and then they're diving off these cliffs and they have to be able to negotiate these parasails and so forth. So I was fascinated the whole way through, and I honestly wasn't sure that I would be, but I think this is a really nice choice for an ending film.
Exactly. And I think Chase Ogden did a wonderful job at pulling together all this different kind of footage. And he edited and produced and edited and directed this film. But the editing is the most important part because he had, as you say,
especially
10 years
time,
of stuff
yeah.
to put
yeah.
together. And I was very impressed.
And so what you're both saying is that you're now going to get into base jumping
yes.
after this
yes.
film, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the,
yeah.
the sport for seniors.
Absolutely. You can walk right out of the theater and head right yeah. off a cliff.
Well, we're just going up to the roof here in a second, aren't
oh,
we?
Yeah. I'll meet you there.
The headquarters here.
By the way, I should say that that was Super Frenchy that we were talking about, and it closed. Closes Spiff on Friday, March 6th at 7:30 p.m. at the Magic Lantern. So you can still get tickets to that. And we would recommend seeing it on a big screen. So Mary Pat, are there any other movies other than Super Frenchy that you're looking forward to or can recommend that people go see during Spiff?
Well, of course, I'm always gravitating toward the docs, and this festival has a number of them, and I'm really enthused with the choices that were made. So I'm particularly looking forward to Building the American Dream, which is about immigrants and refugees who may be exploited in the building industry in Texas. Again, maybe some shades of American Factory, but that mm-hmm. looks great. Also, there's a movie, Stories of Us, about homelessness, playing on Wednesday, March 4th. There is a Spokane-based film called Bias about implicit bias and training for police departments. And so I think that looks good, as well as Climbing Blind. So if you don't have enough of right outdoor movies, that looks like a good
and,
one.
You know, you missed one documentary, Eagle Boy.
I didn't get to that one
okay,
yet.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, yeah. No, so I'm excited.
No.
So, Dan,
Eagle Boy,
why
3
p.m.
Well,
that?
The reason why I bring up Eagle Boy is because we just talked about Super Frenchy and how amazing some of the footage is. And the footage in Eagle Boy also is amazing because it's about the suicide race at the annual OMAC Stampede, where these young Indian riders take their horses, go down this blind cliff through water, and then they race into
crazy.
The... Yeah, it is insane, but the footage is amazing.
And I want to call out a couple of international features because that's what I'm always looking for at Spiff. So on Saturday, February 29th at 5:30 p.m., you can see Song Lang, which is a Vietnamese feature, and it's about this friendship, possibly burgeoning romance between two men, one of whom is a debt collector, one of whom is an opera performer in 1990s Saigon. And then later that night at 7:30, you can see Balloon, which is a German film. I haven't seen this one, but it sounds interesting. And it's a true story about two families trying to escape East Germany during the Cold War. And they use a hot air balloon to do it.
Yeah, it was made once before into a Disney film.
Really?
Starring John Hurt, of all people. And, you know,
oh, I think
very,
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It didn't get very good.
I didn't realize that was the same story, but maybe this will be a better version.
This is a far better version, yeah, exactly. Almost every year we try to get something from the former Yugoslavia, and we've gotten movies from Kosovo before. On Sunday, March 1st at 5:30 p.m. at the Magic Lantern, we have a movie from Serbia called Stitches, which I saw and which I think is a fine little movie. But I think this, as every year, the Spokane International Film Festival is a treasure for local movie fans. And that was our final preview of the 2020 Spokane International Film Festival. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed The Assistant and Chase Ogden's documentary feature, Super Frenchy. We need to thank Jim Tavenin for returning this week to both produce and engineer the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again try to separate cinema wheat from cinema chaff. Until then, remember these words from comic book author Charles Soule. And after all, what's the point of being Daredevil if you can't leap before you look? You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.